Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Wednesday, March 29, 2017. Will Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir be arrested this time when he attends the Arab League summit?
No, I think this is next to impossible because he was invited as a head of the state and through the Arab League. When he was invited to attend the AU summit, and South Africa refused to arrest him there.
And aid agencies working in South Sudan worry about future funding from the U.S. government.
We know that the administration has proposed about 30% cuts to State Department and USAID. And from what we know, the role of these institutions, there will definitely be negative implications.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Human Rights Watch says Jordan should deny or arrest Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir, who is attending the 28th Summit of the Arab League in Amman. Human Rights Watch says al-Bashir has been a fugitive from the International Criminal Court since 2009. The ICC issued two arrest warrants in 2009 and 2010 related to charges of genocide, crimes against humanity, and war crimes in Darfur. Hamdi Abdulrahman is a political science professor at Cairo University. He says it's unlikely members of the Arab League will arrest Mr. Bashir.
No, I think this is next to impossible because he was invited as a head of the state and through the Arab League. And always there is an explanation to this, as happened in South Africa when he was invited to attend the AU summit and South Africa refused to arrest him there. And it was a controversy that he is a head of a state and he has immunity not to be arrested. I think the same apply here in Jordan, despite that Jordan is a member of the ICC.
How does that impact on the efforts by the International Criminal Court to punish, if you like, those who have committed crimes, especially heads of states?
There is no determination of the international community to fulfill the international justice everywhere in the world. This is a lack of implementing justice in the international community.
There was little action from the Arab world to even remind the Sudanese leaders to respect humanitarian law in Darfur. Do you agree with that assertion?
The Arab Spring and the war in Syria, in Libya. Sudan is more peaceful than Syria, Libya, and Yemen. So it is not logic that the Arab world will leave these hot spots in the Arab world and looking for al-Bashir.
Qatar government tried to mediate between the Darfur rebel groups and the Sudan government, but looks like the agreement did not hold a lot of water. Would you say the Arab world is committed to see a peaceful resolution to the conflict in Darfur?
Big neighbors like Egypt was not there, so they missed Egypt and the other neighboring countries. So in Darfur, the negative aspect is the case of South Sudan. So when South Sudan ceased to a state of civil war, so the people saying, look, we are not going to have another failed state again. So speaking about the case of Darfur or Zanuba Mountain or Kordofan. So the only way to go ahead is to make more pressure and to get the civil society inside Sudan and the political groups and political parties united facing the government in order to have a sustainable peace in these areas. Despotic leader comes to power in Khartoum.
Bashir, of course, is enjoying the benefits of track one diplomacy, country-to-country relations, his presidential immunity.
Bashir, he's still there because you don't have a united front facing al-Bashir. So he was playing the game how to divide and rule. It works in Sudan. And he used some ideology, and it's like selling promises to people. So this is a way when you mix religion, ideology, and divide your opposition in order to stay in power. So he is very clever in doing that.
Let's look at the variable there you're putting forward, the religious ideology. Does the religion of President Bashir allow him to kill people?
You know, when you are in power and you hijack religion, you can find an interpretation, a holy interpretation, why you kill people to raise the name of Allah, for example. So killing by the name of Allah is more common among the political Islamists.
If Jordan is not willing to arrest President Bashir, is there any country in the Arab world that will one day arrest Bashir?
You know, I will quote the famous Nigerian political economist, Claude Ake. Claude Ake once said, the responsibility to clean the house is the inhabitant of the house. So the responsibility to clean the house of Sudan is for the Sudanese themselves. The Sudanese are suffering, like many others who are suffering in many places in the Arab world, like in Somalia or in Yemen or in Libya. So how to change this situation, it is the responsibility of the people themselves without interference from other countries.
That's Hamdi Abdulrahman, a political science professor at the Cairo University. He was speaking to me from Dubai earlier today. A U.S. congressional subcommittee had complaints Tuesday that USAID programs are at risk of getting slashed or eliminated under the proposed budget from the White House during a time when there is a threat of famine in East Africa. Ayen Bior reports for VOA from Washington.
At the hearing of the House Foreign Affairs Subcommittee on Africa, panelists warned that U.S. budget cuts could undermine efforts to address the consequences of drought and crisis-driven famine at a time when aid agencies are attempting to scale up efforts to prevent millions from dying. In prepared remarks submitted to the committee, panelist Faustine Wabwire, Senior Foreign Assistance Policy Advisor for the Bread for the World Institute, said the proposed budget cuts risk slashing or eliminating the very accounts that finance the U.S. government's emergency response. These include the Food for Peace, International Disaster Assistance, and the Migration and Refugee Assistance Programs of the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID.
We know that the administration has proposed about 30% cuts to State Department and USAID. And from what we know, the role of these institutions, there will definitely be negative implications.
Matthew Nims, acting director of the Food for Peace office, told lawmakers the president's blueprint does not specifically mention cuts to his office and that he cannot measure the potential impacts of the proposed budget cuts.
I feel that it's my job to make sure that with the resources we're given by Congress as it goes through, that we make the tough choices that are going to be there in the future and that we continue to stress the most vulnerable and the most needy in the world.
The Famine Early Warning Systems Network reports an estimated 70 million people in 45 countries will need emergency food assistance this year. Famine has already been declared in parts of South Sudan, and more than 20 million people are at credible risk of famine in Nigeria, Somalia, and Yemen over the next 6 months, according to the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, or UNOCHA. The Food for Peace program, established in July 1954, provides emergency food aid and development food assistance to tens of millions of people in dozens of countries each year, according to its website. The USAID program receives most of its funding through the government's Title II grant, which administers both emergency and development resources. Its other major source of funding is the International Disaster Assistance Account, or IDA, which allows Food for Peace to buy foods locally locally, regionally, and provide voucher programs and market-based interventions. Panelist Michael Bowers, Mercy Corps' Vice President of Humanitarian Leadership and Response, advised lawmakers to fully fund IDA and Food for Peace, adding that is one step Congress can take to prevent the spread of famine and create conditions that mitigate food crises.
If we fail to respond now, we risk a much larger and costly emergency response later, with too many lives lost in the meantime. Although funding is also needed across the region, we are barely scratching the surface of what we've had.
Subcommittee Chairman Chris Smith, a Republican from New Jersey, told VOA after the hearing that he is unhappy with the president's budget blueprint as it stands, adding that he does not like the big cuts and his goal is to get it right.
The world is in crisis. There's humanitarian needs. The number of people of concern to the High Commissioner for the UNHCR, the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, is at an all-time high. There's crises everywhere, and we need to do more to try to help people in need.
UN OCHA says more than $5.6 billion is needed to prevent a major humanitarian disaster. Of that amount, only about $1 billion has been committed. Ayan Bior, VOA News, Washington.
South Sudan government continues to say it will give unfettered access to aid workers, days after six aid workers were shot dead. Aid officials and South Sudanese authorities met yesterday to discuss insecurity problems. Aid officials also complain about the increased work permit and visa fees. Waki Simon Wudu has the report for VOA from Juba.
Aid officials told the Cabinet Affairs Minister Elia Lomuro that governors, security agents, and military commanders are denying them access to people in need of life-saving assistance. Joyce Luma, the UN World Food Programme's country director in South Sudan, says WFP staff must pass through 55 checkpoints in order to reach Bentiu, the capital of former Unity State, where at least 100,000 people are facing hunger. She says at each checkpoint, a commander demands anywhere from 2,000 to 3,000 South Sudanese pounds.
We as WFP, we recently, did an auction of cars, and we're moving the cars to Rumbek, and the cars were supposed to go to, go to Rumbek, and we're going to Wau. But when we reached, for example, when we reached in Rumbek, the cars were detained, even though we have the go-ahead. Up to now, we've been talking to the authorities there. We are not allowed to move our cars to Wau.
In another incident, Loma says government forces in Mayendit confiscated WFP food wrappers. The wrappers are used in WFP food airdrops. The food is distributed to hungry civilians. The UN humanitarian coordinator in South Sudan, Eugen Owusu, says South Sudanese authorities in Juba must do more to address these kinds of challenges that impede the work of aid agencies. Pio Ding, chairperson of international non-governmental organizations operating in South Sudan, says he believes there is a breakdown in the government chain of command.
I get a stamp from NRC. I expect it to be respected even at the lowest chain. And when that doesn't happen, it's really frustrating. We have, just another example, we had trucks going to build a school in Bibor and to stop at Bor and returned back.
President Salva Kiir recently directed national and state authorities to allow unhindered access to aid agencies. Aid officials say despite those assurances, humanitarians continue to face the same hurdles months ago in accessing millions of South Sudanese in urgent need of aid. Minister Lomuro says denying access to aid workers tarnishes the government's image.
We have decided that we'll compare notes, the information we've got from our ministry, is that approvals were given. We will compare with the information that the NGOs have got under UN OCHA, and then we will submit to the cabinet what the real issues are in order for us to have to develop a mechanism that will finally address this matter.
Aid workers also say they are concerned about the government's recent decision to increase work permit fees for professionals or those in the business class from $300 to $10,000 per year. The decision was announced within the past month but was not implemented. After widespread criticism over the new fees, the government set up a committee to review the decision to ensure the work permit fees are in line with the fees charged by outer countries in the region. Though the committee has yet to report its findings, Lomro says the government is considering revoking the decision to increase work permit fees.
We are members of the Eastern community. We cannot act any different because it affects us. So if that is established, then, you know, we will provide the information necessary for the president to be able to invoke the provisions of Article 90 of the Constitution.
Article 90 of South Sudan's transitional constitution gives the president the power to stay or suspend a law. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Still in Juba, foreign envoys representing more than a dozen countries in South Sudan are condemning what they call reprehensible killing of six aid workers along the Juba-Pibor Road on Saturday. In a joint statement issued today, the European Union delegation, along with the heads of missions of Canada, China, Japan, and the United States, strongly criticized the killings and offered their condolences to the bereaved families. The envoys are calling on South Sudan government to thoroughly investigate the attack and arrest the killers. The statement calls on all warring parties to allow safe, secure, and unhindered access to aid workers to help people in need. The envoys say all armed actors should adhere to ceasefire agreed on in the 2015 peace agreement and urge the warring parties to make genuine efforts to bring about peace, stability, and improve humanitarian access. The envoys praise the regional bloc EGAD for insisting that all humanitarian corridors be immediately opened unconditionally. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudan prison officials say they are struggling to feed inmates. Find out why when we come back after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you fear speaking in public?
Yes, I'm not so good with speaking in public. Yes, so I'm a little afraid of it. But once I start, I always get over the fear.
I don't think so. I enjoy speaking in public.
Not necessarily. I'm a good speaker, so I don't fear.
I fear I'm shy, so that is why I fear.
Anytime I'm given the microphone to speak in public, I shake. So I don't like speaking in public.
I don't fear because I practice every Sunday. I happen to be a preacher anyway. So by the mere fact that I'm able to speak every Sunday at least in church, it's easier for me to speak in public.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. South Sudanese prison authorities say inmates are going hungry. The Director General of South Sudan's National Prison Service says Juba Central Prison provides one meal to nearly 1,300 inmates per day. The authorities say nearly 30 contractors who supply food to National Prison Service have stopped because the government owes them thousands of dollars. Michael Atit has more on the story for VOA from Juba.
General Henry Kwany Agwar, Director General for South Sudan's National Prison Service, says the deteriorating economy affects everyone, including inmates.
We used to provide two meals a day for each prisoner, but nowadays we are struggling to provide one meal. It is a common problem, even ourselves who are working in prison, our meal is also one a day.
In audio provided by iRadio in Juba, Agwar says the finance ministry has failed to pay dozens of food contractors for months. As a result, Agwar says, contractors are not supplying food for the National Prison Service as food prices continue to skyrocket.
The contractors have been hard up to get money from finance, and the markets are very high beyond what they could afford to provide the required food items for prisoners. This is a problem facing our administration. But still, we have not given up, and the contractors have not surrendered yet.
Aguar says prison authorities have asked the finance and the interior ministries, which oversees the national prison's budget, to pay prison contractors so that food will once again be delivered. Riau Gatler Gai, South Sudan's deputy interior minister, says he's aware of the food shortages at prisons across the country and says interior and finance ministry officials are working to address the problem.
I have a knowledge about what is going on. There is really a problem because we know the situation, economic situation in the country, but we are trying to coordinate with the ministry, the national minister of finance.
Guy says Juba Central Prison alone requires 32 million South Sudanese pounds per month to be able to provide two meals per day. He says he believes that inmates must be fed well even though they are in prison to pay for their wrong deeds. Guy notes it is the government's responsibility to provide prisoners with food and ensure their safety.
Even getting food to these inmates is a part and parcel of security, and it is part and parcel of their right, because they were put there for one reason. They were not put there because they are not one. They are still part of us. They can be treated the same treatment, even if we are in economic crisis.
Minister Guy says prisoners cannot be treated any different just because the country is on the throes of an economic crisis. South Sudan hosts more than 6,000 inmates in 75 prisons across the country. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
A top International Monetary Fund official is encouraging the South Sudan government to invest in physical infrastructure and policy-making institutions in order to rescue the country's collapsing economy. IMF's representative for Africa urged South Sudan's warring parties to end the fighting so that hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese can return home and contribute to the country's development. Tito Justin has more for VOA from Juba.
Morales says the government must first restore lasting peace if it's going to rebuild confidence among potential investors. He says the government must adapt to financial discipline in order to stabilize domestic prices and restore economic stability. That includes coming up with a credible set of fiscal measures like building fiscal infrastructure to regain credibility. Morales says Juba must develop and strengthen institutions that fight corruption and improve governance in the country.
Everything we advocate is in terms of stability, conditions for growth, strengthening institutions, is because we think it's the best way to have the people of South Sudan and all the countries we work on getting more favorable economic outlook for their own households and their own life and their own personal interest.
Morales says the security situation in South Sudan has become even more difficult, forcing IMF staff to work outside the country, including in Washington and Kenya.
The activity is also suffering from people leaving the country, and the danger is that at one point you don't have the human capital that is required. So I think at this point the situation is so serious that is the urgent task is to stop this migration of, out of South Sudan of capital and human capital resources, and then hopefully putting in place measures that start instilling some confidence in other players so they can come back and become more favorable to having some medium-term interest in the country.
He says the government must create an environment that attracts capital and allows economic activities to take place.
When the economy finally goes back to having some flows, economic flows start to be significant enough for the government to get the resources to provide the necessary services, then we hope that a virtuous circle can start. Not only for South Sudan alone, but also for the region. I think once South Sudan becomes a stable economy and they can also participate in the regional activities.
Morales says the East African community wants to see a stable economy in South Sudan, but that can only happen when there is finally some political stability in the country.
For South Sudan being located and being part of East Africa, Still, there is a way to go before they reach a stable situation. But I think South Sudan and the region will benefit from a stable and dynamic economy in that part of the region.
The IMF released a report last week detailing the deteriorating economic conditions in South Sudan since the outbreak of violence in late 2013. The IMF says real gross domestic product, the financial value of goods and services produced in the country, have declined by nearly 20% in the past 2 years. And according to the IMF, South Sudan's annual inflation rate rose to 550% in September 2016 before declining to 370% in January. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here, a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Human Rights Watch says Jordan should deny entry or arrest Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir, who's attending the 28th summit of the Arab League in Amman. Human Rights Watch says Bashir has been a fugitive from the International Criminal Court since 2009. The ICC issued two arrest warrants in 2009 and 2010 related to charges of genocide and crimes against humanity, among other alleged crimes. Hamdi Abdelrahman is a political science professor at Cairo University and says members of the Arab League are unlikely to arrest Mr. Bashir during his time in Amman. And the South Sudan government says it continues to vow to ensure unfettered access to aid workers after six aid workers were shot dead on Saturday. Aid officials and South Sudanese officials met yesterday to discuss insecurity and other problems that affect the urgent aid needed for hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese citizens. Aid officials also complained about dramatically increased work permit and visa fees. The cabinet affairs minister says the government may delay higher work permit fees. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Africa Motto by C. Single. We have been listening to Say Single with the song Africa Motto. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.